Hey, it's Francis Lamb, host of The Splendid Table. Every week on our show, we talk about food and cooking and the meanings of food and cooking. We talk with the most interesting people in food about their techniques, their culture, and everything in between. Whether it's about how fried chicken took over the world or how Instagram changes the way people are actually eating. It's a food show where everyone is welcome. Come join us. You can listen to The Splendid Table wherever you get your podcasts.
You're listening to Heritage Radio Network. Since 2009, HRN podcasts have been exploring the wide world of food, beverage, and agriculture. Learn more at heritageradionetwork.org.
This episode is brought to you by Wisconsin Cheese. We've been making cheese in Wisconsin since before we were even a state, which may be one reason why we win so many awards for it. It's what happens when a whole state dreams in cheese. Find your next favorite cheese at wisconsincheese.com.
We talk about food. We talk about music with musical dudes. Finger on the pulse, snacky tunes.
Hello and welcome to Snacky Tunes. I'm your host, Darren Bresnitz. We have an all new delicious episode for you today. We're kicking things off over in Hawaii with Hannah Dreiling, the co-founder and head of creative of Holy Grail Donuts. We talk about her time cooking at the Waffle House, her recreation of this incredible nostalgic treat with her brother Niall, and their expansion to the mainland. And then we're hanging out with some of our new favorite guys from Philly, the boys of Snack Time, who just put out a new single from their first studio album. The song is Together, and we had such a great time talking about their love of Philly food, their love of Philly sports, and what they eat when they get home from tour. And speaking of which, they are on tour right now with Portugal the Man, so check them out if they're in a town near you. So please sit back, relax, and enjoy Snacky Tunes here on HRN.
Some days we go through the fire, and some nights are cold and dark. When you feel that your good has expired, the music is a good place to start. If you came to party, we'll show you how.
Just know I got you.
We'll be right back.
Hannah, welcome to Snacky Tunes. So happy you're joining us from Hawaii all the way here in LA. Welcome to the show.
Thanks, Darren. I am blessed to be here. Super excited.
Yeah, so, you know, it's February, and I have to imagine a lot of resolutions running out, people who made commitments in January. Have you seen an uptick in donut sales around this time of year?
Actually, we have, surprisingly. So, you know, everyone's got their resolutions, but ours are to eat more donuts. So,
you know, I've been noticing this trend in the last couple years about people looking backwards to nostalgic types of food, but then reinventing them either in a new modern take or a healthier take. And it seems like something that you have done. Why do you think that this combo is so popular right now?
Yeah, I love this topic. And that was a huge inspiration for us in starting Holy Grail. Just looking back at, you know, the way coffee shops have even been reinvented, such as like Blue Bottle, the like craft coffee, and the obsession towards like the origin of the actual ingredient, I think is really special. And we noticed that, you know, not many or if any people have been doing that with donuts, which is, it's such a nostalgic food, right? But not particularly healthy by nature. So, you know, our goal was kind of to create, recreate and reinvent this product in a way that, you know, we could feel good about eating it, right?
No, of course, of course. I mean, everyone likes a little guilt-free indulgence if possible.
But still a donut.
still a donut. Yeah. You know, speaking of nostalgia, I read that you had worked at the Waffle House. Is that true?
Yeah. My culinary journey started from making waffles. I did that for a couple years while I was in college. You know, washed dishes, made waffles, did the whole thing. But I've always just been obsessed with this industry, and I never thought I'd be making donuts, but here I am.
What did you learn from the Waffle House? Cause they serve a huge quantity. It's a decent quality. It's a streamlined operation. Anything that you took from them that you still practice today?
Yeah. I feel like waffles are also like a nostalgic food, right? But it got me thinking of like that as a baseline, like that waffle and like what toppings you're putting on it. Sort of like as this blank slate for storytelling around ingredients. And that's kind of the way we look at donuts too, right?
No, of course. As so a canvas.
We're making this like Liège waffles, just frying those up every day and putting different unique toppings on it. But it was always that same like nostalgic base, right? Baseline.
I mean, is there a through line from the time at the Waffle House to the idea for a Holy Grail?
You know, I haven't actually thought of the Waffle House recently. That was a fun college experience. But yeah, now that you mention it, that, you know, probably creatively inspired me in one way or another.
Yeah, I mean, it's so funny with what you keep with you as you journey and travel through life. And I know you made your way to Hawaii, I believe specifically Kauai. What brought you there? What made you want to leave the mainland?
Yeah. I moved to Hawaii about, I'm going to lose track here, 12, 13 years ago. And I was studying product design in college. I quit working at the Waffle House.
Oh, of course, of course.
And, yeah, I was studying product design, and I came out there for an internship, and I just fell in love with the place. Easy to do. And I landed some amazing internships with some private chefs, and just became just obsessed with food from growing it. I had a exotic fruit farm I was living on.
Wow. And
I was obsessed over every aspect of, you know, this industry. and landed some amazing gigs cooking for some celebrity chefs. And I ended up just moving, leaving my stuff in Oregon and landed in Kauai, and I'm still here.
So 12 years ago, what was the dining food farmer scene like in Hawaii and Kauai?
I mean, Kauai has some of the most like fertile land and I've ever seen in my entire life. Mm-hmm. So it's unique because it's the only place in the United States where you can actually grow things like chocolate, for instance.
Mm-hmm.
So I just began developing relationships with all these amazing farmers, from our chocolate farmer who we actually use today. And so it was like this slow build of like building all these different relationships on Kauai through my private chefing, which led us to Holy Grail and people we're still working with now. But yeah, the restaurant industry is a bit scarce over there, as you can imagine, but there's so much opportunity, I feel like, in Hawaii to really utilize more of the land and locally grown ingredients. And I noticed like it was being underutilized, especially with taro root, you know, Hanalei being the largest producer of taro. But like, where is the taro going? Right.
Sure.
Much of the ingredients still to this day in Hawaii are being shipped out here. I don't believe is sustainable long-term.
No.
So yeah, being a part of that shift has been really just humbling.
I mean, donuts have historically been a business or a foot in the door for a lot of people who are transplants. I think, you know, in Los Angeles in the late 70s, Cambodians opened up donut shops in droves. So I have to imagine that there's, I don't want to say easy because no food business is easy, but something appealing in the donut business. What drew you in? What made you start thinking about getting into this type of cuisine?
Right. I feel like, yeah, generally speaking, donuts just like encapsulate joy. At least for me, like everyone's just like, you hear the word donuts and you get excited. So that was always intriguing. And then this thought around donuts to bring people together. That was really intriguing. And then just thinking about, you know, as I'm working with all these niche ingredients and local farmers, just like, how can we recreate that in a unique way? And again, back to like the storytelling and donuts as this beautiful blank slate for that. We just became wildly obsessed. And my brother at the time, actually, as I was working on, I was working as a private chef on Kauai, him and his friend had started a little donut delivery business in Oregon, making, you know, run of the mill donuts, delivering them to college dorms. And me and him would have our weekly little check-ins. And yeah, we just kind of became obsessed with this idea of like reinventing the donut.
So you've spoken a little bit about the reinventing and you've alluded to the taro root, but once you landed on this donut business, how did you develop the recipe? How did you go in this direction? Because you also cook them to order, which is, you know, anyone who goes into a donut shop, it's usually just rows and rows and rows of already cooked donuts.
Right. Yeah. There's nothing better than a hot, fresh donut.
No. Every time, like, it's apple cider season. We get those tiny little donuts. Yeah.
It's not the easy route, but it's so delicious. I don't know. One day it just clicked with my brother and I, and the Holy Grail just came about. He literally, like, we packed his bags and moved him out to Kauai. We're like, we've got to try this out. So we ended up buying a hamburger trailer and we're like, let's test this concept like one day a week.
Of course.
The community reacts. We'll do burgers all week and we'll do Sunday morning donuts, fresh donuts. Taro was the obvious choice for us for the dough because we're in Hawaii. We're surrounded by just an abundance of beautiful, beautiful taro. Creates this like savory base for the donut. Similar to like a potato donut in Maine, right? Nobody was doing like a real taro root, locally grown taro root donut. So our vision was like, okay, let's create this donut that like encapsulates Hawaii, right? So we figured out how to fry them in coconut oil. We developed the dough recipe like completely from scratch. Most donut shops take the easier route of like, you know, buying like a pre-made mix.
Sure, sure.
We were like, we can't do that. We're going to obsess over like every ingredient that goes into this. Hand pick it. So we essentially kind of had to build our own donut supply chain.
I love it.
While living in the same studio apartment, just poured everything into this, making the recipes.
I'm sure that was good for your relationship, right? No stress?
No stress at all. Yeah. we just became wildly obsessed with it. And that's how we started this Sunday ritual.
Amazing. All right. Well, we're going to take a little break. We're going to talk about how those little Sunday rituals became hour-long lines and the music that you provided to the people waiting. We're going to talk about how you scaled up and coming to the mainland. We have a song from the archives here on Snacky Tunes on HRN. Welcome back to Snacky Tunes. We're here with Hannah Dreiling, co-founder and head of creative over at Holy Grail Donuts. And you've brought your brother to Kauai. You've got these donuts going up Sunday morning. And before we get into the success, I came across this thing where you talk about, well, Niall talks about how the donut is a platform for your values, which is something I've never thought about with this food. Does that ring true for you as well? And how are your values reflected on these donuts?
Yeah, absolutely. Our donuts, yeah, like I said, like this blank canvas for our values as well. We're able to focus on sustainability, which I think is one of our largest values. And that's through working with local farmers, using the taro root, handcrafting everything. And so that's a huge part of our product and our values as well. And having fun, like, is another value for us. So this celebration aspect, and that's kind of where the music plays in, and that community aspect, collaboration plays in, which I'll go into later with around like our breaking bread concept, flavor development.
Well, I know that music is a big part of it, because as the popularity of the donuts grew, so did the lines. And to help bring a little bit of joy and to provide a little entertainment, you guys would bring in DJ performers or DJs to entertain the crowd while they waited. Can you talk about why you did this and what music was played while people waited?
Yeah. We started off with a bit of a bang. We had immediate kind of lines just from the local community. And this was like a true community donut. So every week we would rotate our menu around seasonality, working with the local farmers. So we'd have like a dragon fruit donut that we literally picked from Ollie's farm the week before. We'd have a chocolate donut from Lydgate Farms. That would be an example of that. So our farmers would show up every Sunday. We would have, it was just this beautiful convergence of our ingredients, but also the vibe. So merging, you know, the culinary with the music and vibe for like this full sensory experience was kind of our goal. And I think we believe that music plays such a like integral part in that, in setting the table for the community. So we decided to hire like local DJs each Sunday.
I love it.
Which was so fun. It was like a house party every week in this parking lot. And yeah, our music taste, it totally varies. I would say we would play a lot of like Jurassic 5. We'd do some Sade, Jay Dilla. And yeah, we would kind of carefully curate our playlists. A lot of golden era hip hop, jazzy R&B, sprinkled in a little techno. But it was this whole vibe that just kind of encapsulated our product in a really beautiful way.
I mean, it's just so awesome and speaks to the community you built and the success you had. And that success allowed you to scale up pretty quickly. When did you realize you had something special and that you wanted to bring in outside investors and really turn this into a much larger enterprise?
Yeah, I guess we never thought about that initially when we started Holy Grail.
Right.
We were having a blast and we were making a product we felt really proud of. And we were surprised and shocked and ecstatic that we had these crazy lines, and it was all like our community that was waiting in those lines, which is huge. And I think that's when it really hit us, like, oh, we're onto something. And that was before tourists eventually caught on. Just the fact that like our community showed up for us each week and waited in hour long lines, we're like, we have something. And we didn't prepare a pitch deck. We didn't think through any of that. However, we did, you know, catch the eye of some incredible investors. Kevin Rose in particular, I think he was waiting in line at one point, and he tried our donuts. I believe he tried them old, actually, the first time. Someone was like, you've got to try these donuts.
Fresh.
No, they brought him like a day-old box of donuts, and he just wilded out. He's like, these are insane. I want you guys to fly out to Big Island this weekend.
Wow.
And give us a pitch. We're like, what? So we're like, okay, we had no, you know, deck prepared. We had no financials prepared. My brother flew out there that weekend. We decided the only way to do this was to make a fresh box of donuts.
Of course.
So in his hotel room, he prepared a 4-pack, slid it on the table.
In front of him.
It was True Ventures who initially caught our eye. And we got a deal on the spot.
I mean, if someone cooked me fresh donuts on the spot, I'd probably give him a deal too.
Right. Yeah. He made them in his hotel room, and it was all over from there. So really humbling experience.
I mean, so you get this money, you get these capitalists in investment, and you decide to come to the mainland, which has a very large donut culture already, even coming to, you know, the west side of California. Did you have to change your approach at all? Did you just feel so confident that you're offering something else that people are going to come? Was there a learning process on your side or the customer side?
Yeah, I mean, I think we really, our goal is to like replicate the vibe that started with in Hanalei. And so that's what we've been trying to recreate, which has had its, you know, it's had its struggles as well.
Yeah, of course.
We essentially were learning a lot about product education at the moment. We have so many differentiators that feel a little difficult at times, like the use of taro and coconut oil, our weekly rotating menu. So there's a little bit of a learning curve there, but overall people are going crazy and loving our product. So,
you know, I know that you, have created a community in Hawaii. Now you have a community here. And obviously there was quite a devastating fire in Maui last year. And you gave back to the community in a huge way. Can you share a little bit about how you're able to support the people in need at their toughest time?
Yeah, absolutely. That all kind of goes back to this concept we created about a year and a half ago. And this all was like, back to our roots around merging culinary music, this full sensory experience of like setting a table for our guests and breaking bread. And then it was this light bulb of like this concept called breaking bread where we use this donut as this blank slate, and we collaborate with different emerging artisans, brands, you know, partnerships. So each month we're creating a new donut, a collaborative flavor that gives back 20% of the proceeds.
It's incredible.
When the fires hit on Maui, we're like, okay, we've got to pivot. We had somebody else lined up to break bread with that month, and we moved things around, and we're like, okay, we're going to do this Maui Ohana donut. And we were able to raise over $11,000, which was huge.
Whoa.
And that was our most popular breaking bread so far. So it was amazing to see also the community showing up in a way and purchasing that donut. So,
wow. I mean, that's amazing. All from such a humble, tasty treat, you can do such big things.
Yeah. Yeah, we're really excited about this concept. We're actually breaking bread with a Master P donut just launched yesterday. So it's just such a humbling experience to see, you know, some of our like idols and people that inspired us growing up are wanting to make donuts with us. So yeah, it's pretty crazy.
So you're in multiple locations on the island, on the mainland. You have built all these great things. You got such a great vibe and community that's coming along with you. What does the future look like? What's next?
The future. Yeah, we're excited to keep expanding and growing. I think we're going to focus a little more on LA right now. We just signed a lease in Long Beach. We're really excited about. And yeah, we're going to keep trying to spread like our initial vibes in Honolulu and create a different donut experience.
Amazing. Well, listen, congratulations. If people want to check out the locations or get donuts or follow along and see who you're breaking bread with, where can they go? How can they see your story?
Yeah. So right now we still have our two locations in Kauai. We have our original food truck in Honolulu. We have our flagship here in Honolulu. And then we've got our two locations in Los Angeles. We have Larchmont Street and Santa Monica.
Amazing. Well, listen, congratulations. I can't wait to check out the donuts next time I'm on the West Side. And a big shout out to Lexi and Vanessa for helping set this up. And thank you for spending some time with us.
Thank you so much. Thanks, Darren. Thanks, Lexi and Vanessa.
Shout Super out.
Fun. I appreciate it.
Of course. We have another song from the archives and then a chat and live performance with Philadelphia Snack Time here on Snacky Tunes on HRN.
Like a little lost cat up in the tree, like a lonely dog without a flea, like a last standing villager on his knees. What you feeling's all over me. Night again.
This episode is brought to you by Wisconsin Cheese. There's a reason when you think of Wisconsin, you think cheese. Cheese is a huge part of Wisconsin's history and future. In Wisconsin, the state of cheese, the tradition of cheesemaking excellence began 180 years ago, before Wisconsin was recognized as a state. Immigrants traveled to settle in this lush green hills of Wisconsin, bringing their cheesemaking traditions with them. These storied skills combined with the freshest milk available created a cheesemaking culture that is uniquely Wisconsin. Wisconsin's 1,200 cheesemakers, many of whom are third and fourth generation, continue to pass on old world traditions while adopting modern innovations in cheesemaking craftsmanship. Find your next favorite cheese at wisconsincheese.com.
This episode is supported by HRN business member Itani Ramen, Chef Kyle Itani's expression of Japanese dining culture located in Oakland, California. At Itani, Kyle explores Japan's rich culture, focusing on traditional flavor profiles and offering an izakaya experience made up of a diversity of small bites, donburi bowls, cocktails, and plenty of ramen. Itani's sister restaurant located next door, Yonsei Hand Rolls, serves open-faced Japanese sushi hand rolls made of crisp nori, seasoned sushi rice, and top-notch fish. Itani Ramen and Yonsei Hand Rolls support HRN's creative, educational reporting and storytelling that drives conversation to make the world a better, fairer, more delicious place.
Sam, Larry, Ben of Snack Time, fellow Philadelphia friends, welcome to Snacky Tunes. And that is about as close as we're going to get to having a band with the same name as the show. Absolutely love it. Welcome, guys.
When we got hit up for this, I was like, did they name it after us?
I mean, yeah. Listen, we're all from Philly and we all love snacks. So I imagine that's, you know, it's going to happen eventually, right?
When we first started the band, I have a bunch of friends who do food and drink, and it was during a pandemic, so everyone was doing a lot of pop-ups.
Yeah.
And my friend said, of course, leave it to Sam. Think the best food pop-up name for a band.
Yeah. Sorry, guys. Love to help you out.
And I actually, at the moment, it was when we first started, I said, you could have it. She's like, no. So it turned out for the best.
Yeah. Well, before we get into it, I just want to make sure we're sort of on the same page. I'd love to hear your favorite place to get a roast pork sandwich in the city.
Who wants to go first?
I'm basic. I started eating roast pork in high school, so John's Roast Pork.
Mm-hmm. Classic.
The thing is, that's not even basic, bro. Like, I feel like you can't. It's hard to beat that. I mean,
yeah.
I mean, it's the go-to. That's what I mean by basic. You know,
I will say I was a big John's Roast Pork guy. Like most of the time of being an affiliate, the past couple of times I've been to the Knicks in the Reading Terminal Market, which I guess is not Tommy the Knicks.
Nice. Yeah.
Pretty freaking good.
Always classic. Always like the Tuesday before Thanksgiving, picking up a turkey, having a sandwich at like 9:30 in the morning.
Yeah. With the broccoli rabs,
and the sharp
provolone, it's pretty magical.
Of course. Ben, what do you have?
I'm between those two. I'm more of a roast beef guy. I just find myself eating a roast beef sandwich more. I go to Nick's.
Nick's roast beef.
But nothing wrong with roast pork.
No,
We also have a shout out to Drew DeTomo at Meeting House. Delicious roast beef.
We just had him on the show the other week.
Really?
Yeah.
Drew's like one of my best friends.
You know, it's I got a lot of Philly pride, so I'm always trying to put a little light on the city.
I saw you interviewed Alex as well.
Yeah.
He's a deep homie. We met in Montreal back in, I guess, pre-pandemic when he and Amanda first got together and we became friends. He's good people.
Good people. Great restaurant. Excited for what's going on with them.
They're amazing.
I'm a Tony Luke's guy, which I know has a lot of controversy of all the family drama. I stay away from that and just, you know, go for the sandwiches. But
I'm actually not familiar with the family drama.
I thought that was just tax fraud.
It's deep. We don't need to get into it, but, you know, we all got Google. You can get into it.
Funny story about Tony Luke. Tony Luke Jr. hit me up on a message. He's a fan of Snack Time. And he said he needed a trumpet player so you could listen to Eric Sherman from Snack Time on the upcoming Tony Luke Jr. single. I think it's called like Smooth Jam or something, but I heard it sounds really good.
Yeah, cool. I mean, he's an accomplished musician in his own right. Look, not to take it down a note, but we are recording the Thursday after the unbelievable collapse of the Philadelphia Eagles. What did you guys do to eat your feelings or try and get over what was a collapse the likes we haven't seen in a long time?
me personally, I just took my Eagles jersey off and put the Sixers one on.
I mean, the meme of Homer Simpson like backing out into the bushes and coming back out. I'm mainly only a Sixers fan these days. I grew up a New York Giants fan. From New York, raised in Florida, but was a longtime New York Giants fan. And then I became a fan of the city of Philadelphia more so. So it was more so being supportive to other members of our band who were deeply affected and traumatized by those actions. So we're still picking up the pieces, but I think we're going to be okay.
Yeah, it's been, I mean, yeah, I'm a little removed from it being out in LA, but everyone who I know from Philly was watching was just a lot of big, like heavy sighs over text as the night dragged on.
Yeah. It's also a pretty big thing too, because I get the Jason Kelce comparison probably twice a day. And I think with him being less on the TV after his potential retirement, they're going to have to find another person to compare me to.
Yeah, well, or I mean,
step in for him.
Yeah. Oh, dude, I literally have dreams every, like, I feel like I have like a quarterly dream about the Philadelphia Eagles have an open call and they need me to play right guard. And I haven't played football since 2011. And I still, like, in my dream, I'm like right with it. Like, I can move fast as fuck, I'm strong as fuck. And so maybe, who knows?
I mean, to be fair, Invincible does exist. Tony Luke was actually an extra in the movie. So if we want to run it back from Invincible 2.
Vince Papali.
Yeah. Speaking of the Sixers, you guys have played a couple of halftime shows with them. One, incredible. Two, how'd that happen? Three, how'd you feel being out on the court?
So we, back in the day when we first started, we were a pandemic band, so we really just played out in the streets. We have a friend of the band. His name is Brian Nadav. He's a owner of a really great lifestyle clothing and shoe store called Laps on Hammer. He invited me to a playoff game to go see the Hawks back in, I guess it would have been 2020, 2021. And I ran into the guy who's in the head of presentation. And he's like, yo, this guy saw you in the street. They want to have you do a thing. So initially we were going to be playing for the Eastern Conference Championship Finals. Ooh. I guess it would be 21, but the Sixers in Sixers fashion lost in game 7. Mm-hmm. It didn't end up happening. And then they ended up following up in the beginning of the next season. We played opening game for the NBA. It was awesome. Since then, we've probably done it about 20 times. So it's been really great. They kind of just saw us on the street, which is sort of the story for a lot of people in the early days. They just saw us and the energy we brought. So it was a really cool thing.
Amazing. I want to talk about those early days after we hear our first song. What's the first one you're going to play for us?
The first one is Gotta Get Funky. Is that correct?
Mm-hmm.
So this one is Gotta Get Funky. On the physical album version, you will see Gotta Get Funky in parentheses while you're taking a shit.
Mm.
Online, you will now just see Gotta Get Funky.
Okay. Well, Yeah, there we go. Here we go. Got to get funky. Snack time live here on Snacky Tunes on HRN.
Talking about.
Welcome back to Snacky Tunes. We're here with Sam, Larry, and Ben of Snack Time. And before the break, you were talking about getting started, busking in the street, and that's just how you met people and got the word out. Why did you start that way? Why start a band during the pandemic when arguably it's the worst time to do anything when you're trying to get a group of people together?
I think it's the worst time and the best time. Everyone in the group has been a professional musician doing freelance stuff, you know, for as long as they can remember. But during this time, everyone, you know, kind of lost all their gigs. They had a bunch of downtime. We didn't get to play music for so long with other people. Venues were shut down, and it was kind of like, the only place we could do it was outside.
Right.
The amount of times we could do it was unlimited because it wasn't like, oh yeah, you're hired for this gig, show up on Tuesday. Right. It was just like, let's go to the park and play. So it was that paired with like the community of Philly was like, there was nothing to do.
Sure.
They hadn't heard music in so long. And this was like a relatively safe thing to do. You could go outside, be spread out. This is talking like 2020 times.
Yeah,
when it was real bad. So that's kind of what started it. It was the need to fill something in Philly where they just needed joy and they needed to dance and they needed to get together. But it was also like all of us were out of a job. We had a bunch of time and we would make a little bit of money, but it was more to like get together and play music. So that's how it didn't really start as like, hey guys, let's start a band. It was just kind of like, yo, who wants to come play? Yeah. And we do it again and again and again. And then it stuck.
And then how long did it take to solidify? And when you're like, oh, this is something real.
It's kind of funny because I remember the first time we got out there and Ben and I had gotten there maybe 15 minutes before everybody else. And the news instantly was like, you guys want to play for the news? And there honestly kind of always just felt to be this like destiny about Snack Time. There was just this magic about it because of the time and the place and the spirit of it. But every single time, regardless if there was, you know, the crowd started and me and Ben have actually been going through the Instagram, sort of just cleaning it up, trying to make it a little bit more together.
Sure.
And, you know, when we started back in the day, there'd be 10 people out there and we thought we were like, yo, this is amazing. And then you look back to our last performance in Rittenhouse, which is probably a year and a half ago. And it was upwards of 300-400 people just
amazing
pulling up. And yeah. It was, so it's, in a way, it's kind of always felt like it was solidified, but I, you know, I think every single time there's a new benchmark that we hit, that kind of brings it one more level up.
Well, I'd also add, and Larry can definitely speak more of this. When it went from like just a street band, whatever, to like, oh shit, this is something different, was the first time we had Larry play with us. Larry plays guitar, which is an electric instrument, and we were playing without power, all acoustic prior to Larry. We were on a stage at a music festival called Beard Fest in New Jersey, and we had Larry, and it was like we had went from this sound of just horns and drums to playing into microphones for maybe the first time, having Larry and that group. And it's actually, we played Gotta Get Funky, the song you just heard. We played that for the first time.
Yeah, it was like
it was half written. It wasn't even finished.
Larry had not even rehearsed with us. He came to the gig. At this point we wrote mostly covers. We played mostly covers.
There you go.
So on like a shitty napkin, I wrote in permanent marker on like this, and it maybe it was a different key. I hand him a scrawled piece of paper. I'm like, you got it? And he's like, cool. And just to kind of piggyback off Ben, I remember we used to close most of our sets in Rittenhouse with Purple Rain. It was like a big emotional moment. And that's also on our first music release. We have a live version of Purple Rain. And Larry just absolutely fucking bodied, played one of the most beautiful solos I've ever heard.
I mean, that song without a guitar solo is not the song.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. So definitely that was a huge moment being like, yep, this is definitely a new step in the right direction.
You know, being a part of the Philly community is such a great thing. It's a rare thing just because it's great music and art and things like that. But, you know, the food scene has really exploded. And I know that you guys have deep ties to that community. You've done pop-ups before. Why do you love that crossover of food and music? How do you see them relating to each other? And who are some of the chefs you've worked with?
So the reason Snack Time prior to the band Snack Time was actually started as a pop-up called Snack Time. And it was started with me and a chef. Her name is Jen Zavala. She has a restaurant in South Philadelphia called Wanna Tamale. And basically, to me, the Snack Time is the intersection of food, music, and community. And I think that in so many ways, it's like an unsung hero of a lot of people. Because I think that a lot of people, just in the same way that they expect to go to a restaurant and the food's going to be ready and hot and perfect all the time, people don't really see the work that goes into it in the same way that I find that with music. I think that people just expect to go hear really good music and they don't care about, you know, your loading. They don't care about what time you got there. They don't care about how much time you practice. They just expect it to be good. So I think that there's just so much intersection of like, of similarities. And also I just think that there's just so much good food. And I met so many friends through the food scene prior to even having any band of my own or our own, that for so long, you know, it was just like, I felt this thing that was missing of this community that people can get together and listen to music and eat food. And then I, you know, sort of just wanted to be the change, but just see the things that I wanted to do. So, and it's really awesome because like through Snack Time, like I obviously have had our own connections that we've had, and then like Larry and Austin, who are from Philadelphia, have shown us so many great insider spots. So it's really shown me all the beauty, all the beautiful food that Philly really has. So, to get back to your question though, we've done a lot of different collaborations. We've done, Michael Ferrari from Irwin's. We've done Michael Solomonoff from the Sahab family, Jose Garces. We've done Matt Kahn from Middle Child, Matt Buddha from Liberty Kitchen. I know there's a bunch more.
Shout out Mark Vetri.
Yeah. Mark Vetri. Oh my God.
Philly goat.
Mark Vetri, we played at his restaurant a bunch. And then when we were in Las Vegas, Mark set up a gig for us at his restaurant in Las Vegas and had us do an amazing show with all this. It was a Philly food party in Las Vegas that he basically helped us put together while we were playing Life is Beautiful. So
he's
we were
best.
Eating like, honestly, yeah, one best. Of the best roast pork sandwich I ever had in my life. It was like this crazy porchetta vibe.
Yeah. I mean, and then that's not fair if it's coming from Mark, you know what I mean?
So, and then after the gig, he took us up to the top of the casino and we ate at Vetri Las Vegas. And then the next day he set us up in a cabana before we played Life is Beautiful. So it was we were so styled out. It was like our first time on the West Coast and we just like got absolutely styled out. And big shout out to Mark Vetri.
Huge shout out.
Pappardelle changed my life.
Yeah,
oh, yeah. His pasta will make you see the world in a different way. All right, let's get to the next song. What are you going to play for us?
The next song, everybody, we're going to be listening to is called Snack Motherfucking Time. It's one of my personal favorites.
Yeah, I mean, it's an anthem, so let's go. Here we go, Snack Time, Snack Motherfucking Time, live on Snacky Tunes here on HRN.
Side to side, foot on Broad Street, bullies exist. With a team on the floor, reppin' 76. Foot with a fields and birds, last bought on the chip. Yeah, I'm talking about Philly. One of the best cities, we home with a fresh Chris. Call me and Meek Millie, we in it. Too fresh in the place to be. So let me tell you about the band that y'all came here to see. This is Snack Time, the band from Halftime. The band who spreads love, give me all the good vibes throughout the pandemic. Even though I just said it, I'ma spell our name out so y'all don't forget it. S-N-A-C-K-T-I-M-E-P-H-I-L-L-Y. We the hottest band from the 215. Everybody get your motherfucking hands in the sky. Put your hands in the sky, put your hands in the sky. Everybody get your motherfucking hands in the sky. If you came to buy a Snack Time Philly tonight, everybody get your motherfucking hands in the sky. When I say snack, y'all say time. Snack, snack. When I say snack, y'all say time. Snack, snack. When I say snack, y'all say time. Snack, 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 snack.
Clap your hands, clap your hands. Clap your hands, clap your hands.
Know this, but we actually were one of the first bands to play here just about 2 years ago. Following that, we released our first record, Sounds from the Street. Were any of y'all there? That's what I'm fucking talking about, because Snack Time fans are the best. You're our snack team. I'm gonna take a quick second to recognize some people on the stage. For the first time in public, on the keys and trombone from Camden, New Jersey, that is Michael Sticky Lips Spearman.
Welcome back to Snacky Tunes. We're here with Snack Time. And we opened up this episode with the lead single from your first studio album, Together. It's out now. How does it feel to have a recorded song out in the world?
We've been waiting a long time for this. We had this great live record out for a couple of years now, and people really, really loved it. But I think we have really transformed over the past couple of years. Mm. We're so excited to show people sort of like where the band is going as we continue to get out of the market and sort of trying to like change people's perspective on like what it means to be a band with a bunch of horns in it.
Right. Cause you could have one idea of what that is, but you're doing something a little bit different.
Yeah. We have all the respect in the world for all of our brass band homies and the ones who really made it happen. But we get a lot of comparisons to like, oh yeah, you guys are like a New Orleans brass band, and we love that, but it's just not us. So we're really trying to change the narrative around like what Snack Time is.
And you're going to have a chance to do that on tour with Portugal the Man.
People yeah, we've been out for a couple of days now, and it's been legendary. I can't believe the reception we're receiving from these people. It's been amazing.
Yeah, I mean, it's always good to open up for a band that's not apples to apples, because that's a way for people to really get to learn about you instead of you opening for, and again, Preservation Hall, love them, shout out to them and their status, but I get I get why you would want to open up for something a little bit different.
And yeah, Larry actually has been such a help since he's joined the band. Like, you know, we went from not playing into microphones to now I'm an endorsed artist by Aguilar, and I have like rig and like I have all this scientific shit happening that I never thought I would ever do in my life. So it's all to make it not sound like a tuba.
Yeah, yeah. How far you come? No, it is a tuba, but don't call it a tuba. I heard that in your past festival appearances and being on the road, that you've set up cookouts backstage and hosted different bands or had potlucks. No? Okay, hold on.
Elliot has wanted to do that, and we're down. It has not happened. We can lie though.
No. Let me cut that out. 1 second.
Yeah. Larry, that looks good, bro. What you got? Watermelon?
Nah, Snapple apple, man.
Oh.
Yeah.
All right, my favorite Snapple is peach.
I haven't come across that one.
All right. Here we go. Yes. So I know you're going out also with Eric Andre on a cruise.
Yeah.
What's the vibe with that? Are you excited about the buffet?
Well, actually, we just came back from that. It was at the beginning of it was at the end of last month before we hit the tour, and it was unbelievable. I mean, Eric has been so supportive to us, and Larry could tell you some crazy stories about some stuff he did on the cruise. So we might have to save that for the unedited episode.
Yeah, that's definitely behind the paywall of like that. I mean, again, getting out in front of like the comedic, you know, crew and group of people is just a great way for you to, spread the word of Snack Time.
I mean, the first opportunity, and I, Ben can tell you a little bit more about it, but Hannibal Buress and we connected on the internet, and we basically sent Hannibal Buress a comment, making reference to one of his jokes about Philadelphia, and then we wound up playing with him. And then, you know, Ben, if you could tell him a little bit about the handful of gigs we did with Hannibal, that was a blast.
Yeah, I mean, there's just always been a strong connection of music and comedy. Mm-hmm. And I think it's a lot of like on the spot, even if the song doesn't involve a bunch of improvisation, it's like we know how to improvise and we know how to change stuff up on the fly. And that goes with working with any musicians, but I feel like comedians that are also musicians, you like really do not know what to expect on stage. And when we played Eric Andre's birthday party, and he basically just had the mic, we were on stage for like 6 hours. And
wow,
at one point he's just like, can't we do some Rage Against the Machine? And we're like, okay, let's go.
I'm like, yeah, do this. We never played that song ever.
So we went from Whitney Houston to Rage Against the Machine to I don't know, James Brown,
Michael McDonald.
We love doing that. But you know, not every gig calls for that, and not every audience is ready for that. But something about the crowd that comes for Eric Andre, they're like, we're down with whatever happens.
It's funny because, like I said, for the first couple of years, for the first year, we didn't have any semblance of set lists, or everything we did was based upon being a DJ. We were just always trying to think. And I think a lot of how we program our stuff now also is still to keep the party going, because we still wind up doing a lot of corporate gigs and weddings. So we're always trying to essentially treat it as if you're listening to a DJ versus a band.
Yeah.
So, but a lot of the times we have all these hand signs and codes that we do when we're live that we've actually been, it's been written about in these publications. And it'll be like, yeah, like they have this way of communicating with each other, because we're so used to operating on the fly that.
Got it. That's amazing.
We figured out our own language, how to talk to each other.
Amazing. Well, listen, you're on the road for the next few weeks. Final question. When you finally get back from a festival or tour, what's your first stop for food in Philly?
Larry?
Oh, man. So I had a New Year's resolution to just eat better overall. Mm-hmm. So I think I'm going to want real food, because I feel like we're going to have a certain attachment to a certain taco spot on the road.
we've just been selected as a Feed the Beat recipient. So now we are partnered with Taco Bell. They sent us a bunch of gift certificates to feed us on the road.
Okay. All right.
I'm going to have to let my stomach heal up after all that Taco Bell, you know.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I mean, you could do like a lettuce bowl or something.
Yeah.
I will go get the best salad. I know you just had Drew DeToma on your show.
Yeah.
The best salad in Philadelphia, Meeting House.
Shout out.
Shout out. That's what we're going to need to heal ourselves. Actually, yeah, that and Cafe Non soup.
Yeah, I was going to say, I'm loving everyone's respectful, healthy answers. I'm going to get the most delicious bowl of pho from Cafe Non.
Yeah.
And short I really rib just,
yeah.
Larry, did we just watch your resolution break?
Yeah. I'm going to get K-pot now when I get back. That's like my spot. I go to K-pot all the time and like, yeah, mm-hmm. Got to stop.
Yeah. We are definitely a hot pot kind of band, which is fun because hot pot is also very communal, and that's very much about us, like the next song you're going to hear called Together.
Yeah.
You like that?
Yeah, I do like it. All right. So Together is the single. If people want to check you out, where can they go to hear the album, see the tour dates?
You can find us on Instagram at Snacktime. And you can find us on all streaming services. We're on Facebook, but if you want the most activated way to be in touch with us, we are mostly active on TikTok and Instagram.
Our Amazing. Website, snacktimephilly.com.
Love it. All right, last song. What do you have for us? What are you taking the show out with?
We have our other single that just dropped. We dropped the single. Oh, yeah, Larry's got the jersey right there. We dropped the single as a two-part. Two songs together. So we had Together come out, but we also have this song, I Don't Give a Damn. And it's kind awesome. Of about, you know, just forgetting about all these things in your life that are that you're so normally caught up with and you're worrying about. And it's releasing all that. And rather than a really negative, I don't give a damn, it's more of a positive.
Amazing. Well, congrats to you guys. If anyone wants some good merch, check out their website. Get a jersey. It looks awesome. Big shout out to Elliot, John, and Graham for helping set this up.
Oh,
here
yeah.
Here we go. Yep. Snack time live on Snacky Tunes playing I Don't Give a Damn on HRN. We'll see you next time. Help us call the name of
Hey y'all, this next one's a new one called I Don't Give a Damn. And it goes a little something like this. I said, oh. Around to the ones who starts it first. Come. If you don't fuck with us, move out the way. Move out the way. Ain't nobody fuck with us that I'm bullshit. When you give a damn the things you shouldn't give a damn to.
Holly on the other saxophone.
Snacky Tunes is powered by Simplecast. Thanks for listening to Heritage Radio Network, food radio supported by you. Keep in touch at heritageradionetwork.org/.
Hey, everybody, I'm Nick Latham.
And I'm Leah Bonema.
And we're the hosts of Were You Raised by Wolves?
Each week, we try to make the world a kinder, nicer place.
Well, that's the idea, at least.
I mean, we try.
Have you ever wondered what to do if you're ghosted?
Or what to do when a friend asks you to borrow money?
Or the proper way to eat Cheetos?
You know, the big questions.
So please find Were You Raised by Wolves wherever you listen.